From our family to your family, this is A Legacy of Faith, the podcast.
Welcome to A Legacy of Faith, a podcast designed to help your family survive the day, plan for tomorrow, and always keep an eye on eternity. We're glad you've joined us for episode number 77, and I'm glad to be back again this bi-week, or whatever we call it, with Leah. Leah, welcome back.
Thank you.
And this is our third or fourth, I guess, of these just kind of random topic, multiple subject podcasts, and you keep saying you enjoy it, so we're going to keep
really
on doing
it. Okay. I really do like these.
Good deal. We have been busy lately, but just mostly things around here, thankfully, but, you know, kind of running local and things, visiting hospitals and all kinds of stuff. We've had fun with our dog.
Oh, me. Yeah. Fun may not be the word.
Actually, in our notes, I put fun in quotation marks. we've spent the last... We're recording this the night before it comes out. This is Thursday night, and we've spent pretty much the last 4 hours, other than stopping to eat supper, trying to contain our dog because... Our neighbors are going to kill us, I think.
Maybe.
It's not out of the question.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
he's something else. But so
rambunctious is an understatement.
That's a good word.
No, it's an understatement. Yeah.
So if you have a pet, we empathize with you very, very, very much. We've got several things we want to talk about this week. And again, we're trying to keep these to, 25 or 30 minutes. And so we may not get to everything we have got written down. And... Lee, I want to start with something that you shared on Facebook. I don't know how long ago it was. It was a while back now. But it was an article called The Church Doesn't Need Any More Coffee Bars. And I noticed on Facebook that you weren't the only one that shared this. I saw you showed it to me, and all of a sudden that day I saw it on, I don't know how many people's walls. It just kept showing up. The basic idea behind this is every church, it seems, I shouldn't say every, but most churches, it seems, kind of want to be hip and cool and draw people in any way they can, all that kind of stuff. And it's not written from the perspective of, you know, a member of, you know, the churches of Christ, but just the broader Christian world. But why did this article speak to you so much? Because you shared it and you told me I had to read it. And as soon as it did, I was like, okay, that's going on the podcast eventually. So why did this article just hit you in a certain way?
I think it was because, like you said, that you see more and more churches trying to appeal to people, but usually it's in a very, sometimes very superficial way. It's like, you know, we're going to serve you, and we're going to make sure, you know, that we appeal to your needs and to your family. You know, and they will even sometimes go after certain demographics, yeah. And, you know, so they'll sit down and think what appeals to this type of people. And the whole point of that article, though, when you read it, is that, you know, not that it's wrong to have something that's kind of fun, like a, you know, coffee bar or whatever, that, you know, might be nice for the people. But it's the whole point is we really don't need all that in the church. What we really need, and her whole point is she had her husband, I think he was diagnosed with cancer.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so she made this very obvious point that when really the church doesn't need to serve people in the way of coffee bars and whatever else we could come up with.
But she went to things like, you know, fancy lighting and
bands. Yeah, like, you know, making sure that every little thing about your building is just right or whatever. And sometimes we do get caught up in that, but she made the point that, you know, she had been through a time in her life where that didn't mean a thing to her.
Right.
She really, you know, she kept repeating, you know, she needed Jesus. She needed, you know, that all the time. And her husband, that's what he needed. And
right.
And then she goes into families who struggle with other areas. And really, when you think about it, and I think that's what hit me, that the people who in the church who are, even if you haven't had a crisis in your family, but you still need the word of God preached, and that should take precedence over everything. And
right.
And so many times in churches, you know, even the preaching can just be watered down enough so that no one gets upset about it. So it just makes you feel good. And that's not the gospel. The gospel doesn't always make people feel good.
Right. And she makes the point in the article. She's not saying it's wrong to have like a coffee bar or whatever, you know, and of course, like we said, she takes it further than we would with different things. But sometimes we get caught up in that. you know, that's what makes our church cool and hip and reach people, is because we've got a cool coffee bar, or our preacher or our pastor dresses, you know, like everybody else, or we've got the best band, or our lights are amazing, or whatever, you know, whatever this particular church does. And she's not saying it's wrong to have those things. Obviously, we would disagree on the band and that sort of thing. But from her perspective, she's not saying it's wrong. But she's saying too many places, that's where their focus becomes, is on just drawing in whoever or trying to be hip and cool, instead of people need the Lord and people need other Christians around them when they're suffering and when they're hurting.
They need encouragement. And she even says, you know, at that time in her life, she couldn't have even told you what kind of lighting the church had or if they had coffee available for her to drink when she came in. She didn't care about that stuff. When she went to church, she needed the Word of God preached to her so she could find comfort and peace. And then she needed the people around her to be encouraging her, not, you know, just one, whatever we could come up with that just seems so shallow that, you know, people always try to say is going to bring people in and, you know, appeal to people. She says, you know, when you really need the church and God's word, that none of that matters to you.
And I wanted to talk about that article because you posted it and I thought it was really, you know, really good, a good perspective, you know, for us to think about. But I also kind of wanted to just take a minute here talk about the balance of that. And that is, you know, I guess pretty much everybody listening to this goes to a church that has a building, you know, has building and grounds and that sort of thing. There is a sense in which if you have those things, they need to be done with excellence. We don't want the church just, you know, deteriorate and become disheveled and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And there may be things a congregation needs to do to try to reach people, you know, in that way. But like we said, it's what's the key, what's the priority?
Right, that is the thing. Not that none of that would be bad, but just that it is not. You don't do focus on that and let the preaching slack, or let, you know, your service to one another slack in a deep way, like making sure that you have a relationship with each other enough that you know when people are struggling and need help. And, you know, I don't know, ushers are fine to have big programs like that. I mean, I'm using this so silly. Ushers are fine. People come in and show them to where to sit and show them what class to go to. But really, I think the whole, maybe it's safe to say the point of that article is what would be more important is to make sure that you have people who are really going to people and finding out what's going on in their lives.
Right.
And that's more important than just having the fancy titles and the fancy organization systems and all of that.
Yeah. And you're talking to somebody, you know, I love that kind of stuff. I'm a systems kind of person, I guess. And I think about that kind of stuff all the time, about organizational charts and the cleanliness of the building. And I'm not perfect at doing this kind of stuff, but I think that way. But hopefully never to the exclusion of, I want to preach the gospel and have a Bible class that teaches, you know, what a concept, the Bible.
Well, you
know?
And you do. I really mean it. But I forgot something I was going to say.
That's okay. You can compliment me again. That'd be quite all right. That'd be just fine.
Oh, I was going to say that, like, especially things like that, it is fair to say that, you know, the larger your congregation is, really you do have to think more about, like, logistics and mm-hmm. things like that, because, you know, even at Ninth Avenue, which is not a huge congregation, but we've been talking, you know, about we need more signs even within the building. You know, if we do have visitors come in, sometimes, like, how would they know where to go? You know, we don't really have a visitors center like a lot of congregations do. So we've talked about things like that, and that's important, but that wouldn't be the only kinds of things we need to be thinking about.
Well, it doesn't need to become where, like, I take six consecutive Sundays in the pulpit to preach sermons that are like 4 minutes of the Bible and 35 minutes talking about how we need a visitor center.
Right.
It needs to be, we're going to preach the Bible, and behind the scenes and meetings and other things, we're going to talk about those sorts of, you know, those guest relations, I guess, kind of things, and deal with that behind the scenes, because that's secondary to people need to connect with the Lord and with other people through worship and through Bible classes and other, whatever programs the congregation has.
But that article really, really is a good read, because it does open your eyes to the real needs of people.
Yeah, so we'll link to that, and a couple other things we'll talk about in just a moment in the show notes, and we'll give that address in just a couple of minutes. Leah, you are a stay-at-home mom, a homemaking mom,
yes,
homeschooling mom. Your life centers around the house and everything. Have you seen this article from the Federalist? Have you seen this?
I thought I pinned that one. Or not did pinned. You, did you I think share I one? Shared this one too.
Okay, well, I came across it. I didn't know if you had or not. The Federalist. This is not a religious website at all, religious blog or anything. It's a political, you know, I will admit, maybe, I guess we could say kind of right-leaning website a little bit. But they ran an article that actually talked about how stay-at-home moms who have an education, a formal education, are not wasting that education. Because the world we live in would say, you spent all this time and you spent all this money going to college, getting a degree, and you got a degree, you got a teaching license. It wasn't free. Last time I checked, Free Harbor wasn't free.
No, it was not.
I mean, you know, it's close, but you know, it wasn't. But you know, you spent all this time, spent 4 years, spent, you know, student teaching, and spent all this money, and you're not bringing any income into the house. You know, you're here at home, and whether we homeschool the children or not, you would still be a homemaker more than likely. But this article is saying you're still not wasting that education because it's more than about bringing an income into the house.
Right. And in this article, one of the big points is that just not, I want to use a big word, notwithstanding.
Ooh.
But I'm probably not going to use it the right way.
Are you wasting your education?
Probably. No, but not just about, you know, the what you put into your children's life. Now, that was one point, but it went farther than that to say that even the skills and the education that you have, they're never wasted. I mean, and as you know, you think about how you use what you know, and anytime you have information and knowledge, that's never wasted. You're going to use that in your life. And you know, I think about in my specific case, of course, I am maybe rare that I have an education degree and now I'm homeschooling. Well, it's not really that rare for that to happen, but
not every homeschooling mom has an education degree.
And you know, but even if I wasn't homeschooling, having a degree in education is very useful. I mean, I would use it. I use it in Bible school all the time, and I could use education, the knowledge that I have about education, even in writing, you know, on the blog, although I'm not writing on the blog.
Or podcasting, your communication skills.
Yeah, so, but especially though for me, I mean, I, you know, with homeschooling, I use that information and I use it in Bible class. And so that was one point, is that you're going to use that. The degree or your education, it's never wasted. Education's never wasted.
Yeah, one thing I thought about when I actually heard about this article first on another podcast, The Briefing actually talked about this article, and that was the first thing I thought about it, was it's easy to take shots at people who aren't bringing in income, you know, a stay-at-home mom, or even, you know, a mom or dad who's only working part-time, you know, or something, and they spend all this money and all this time getting a degree, and they're either bringing in, you know, not much money to the house, or you know, just a part-time job or something like that. But then I thought, really, that's just an easy target. Because you could also say, well, somebody spent X number of thousands of dollars getting, I don't know, a history degree, and now they're preaching.
And you use that history degree?
That's right. That's
all the time?
For people who don't know, my undergraduate degree has nothing to do with the Bible. And it was Freddie Hartman. I took Bible classes. But I do not have an undergraduate Bible degree. My degree is in history, and I got a teaching license. Now, I did go back and get a master's in ministry when I knew that's what I wanted to do. But people could take shots at me and say, you wasted 4 years of your life. You know, you should have been studying the Bible if you were going to be preaching. I didn't know I was going to be preaching. And it's easy, though, to take shots at the stay-at-home mom, or I guess in some cases the stay-at-home dad, you know, who spent all this time, and they're not bringing in any income. And that's the article really is basically saying, that's not what this is about. The education is not just so you can, you know, pull an income in and, you know, bring in the big bucks. It's about adding value to your life. It doesn't have to be monetary value. And like you said, an education, as long as you apply it, is not wasted. You said, my degree is in history. Now, are all of my illustrations from history? No, but a few of them are. And if nothing else, I think I know a lot of ways to study the scriptures, study for Bible classes and things, in part because not all of my classes were Bible. I learned how to study in other disciplines, education, history, and so forth. And I bring those skills, I'm not trying to brag about it, but I bring some of those study skills to Bible study that maybe someone who only took Bible classes their whole life maybe don't look at things, study things from the same perspective. And I've leaned back on that a lot.
Well, and if you think of this with the Christian worldview, whatever education someone has, that's just going to give them an added value to the church in a more unique way. I mean, if someone has an education maybe in the science field, mm-hmm. well, imagine that person being able to shed light on some scientific information that a lot of people don't have. And that would be good even if he or she may be, you know, of course this is about women, but even if she is not, you know, using that in the career world, she still has that information and she can share it with others. And that just makes our world richer if you have more people educated, even if you're not working in that field or working at all, you know, with any field, if you are staying at home, then, you know, I love the article because it just kind of expresses my heart about education. And really I taught 1 year of school.
Mm-hmm.
I went to school and I learned and did all the work. And then when we moved, that first time I remember thinking, and we were, you know, wanting to start family in several years or a few years. And so we just thought this move is coming at a time to where by the time, you know, the time for our family that we want to start a family was coming closer. And so not immediate or anything, but I remember that being the kind of the reason. But, and I remember feeling that at the very beginning, like, wow, you know.
I wasted all this time.
But then I don't feel that way now at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
And, you know, it also speaks to, just very briefly here, it also speaks to how sad it is that all people see an education, especially, you know, college, university education for is how much money can I make?
Mm-hmm.
And it is just not, I mean, we're thankful, you know, for, you know, a teacher getting a master's degree and making more money or whatever. But that's not all it's about.
Or even about getting a job.
Right.
You know, just even not even thinking about the money, but just your education is not just about getting a job. I mean,
right.
That's what I was trying to say earlier. It's never wasted at all.
Really, the most important thing, I think, if you get a 4-year degree in anything, I think the most important thing you take away is how to learn.
Exactly.
It's not necessarily what you learn.
That's
it's
what
how
education
to learn.
Ought to be anyway, is yeah. teaching someone how to learn.
And speaking of how to learn, Leah. We've got to remind people of the update, if it'll work. Yes. It is time for This Week in the Wizard of Oz. And we keep kidding about this because we've mentioned that once you get past the first Wizard of Oz novel, we're still in the second one, by the way. We're almost done with it. Hopefully this weekend we'll finish it. This coming weekend we'll finish it. It just gets weirder. I mean, and I promise, if, you know, listening, I actually got a text today from somebody who, you know, said they couldn't wait for the Wizard of Oz update. I'm trying not to be funny about this. It just gets weirder, doesn't it?
Pretty weird, I have to say.
It really does. There's a general named Ginger, or Ginger as we're calling her, and there's now a flying couch with a moose head because, like, somebody ate some pills or something, and now they're like, there's giant jackdaw birds that are, like, attacking them, but they built their nest out of money, and they put money inside the scarecrow's suit. It's like, what on earth? There are times, honestly, I don't remember what's going on because it's so bizarre. I have to really think about this. But as we've said every time, the kids...
they love it.
They love it. And so, what's the update? All I know is we've headed back to the Emerald City, and would you believe now we're back to where Glinda the Good is back in the story after... it's just, I don't know where
from
we're
going. From the Wizard of Oz.
From the Wizard of Oz, yeah, the same one.
And we'll have to make a... you need to do a retraction.
Oh, yes. Why did you have to remind me
of
this?
Well, we owe it to the listeners.
Yes. On the last podcast, I dropped a little quiz on you as to what the Tin Woodman's real name was.
He kept saying Jack Chopper.
Jack Chopper. The pumpkin's name is Jack Pumpkinhead. Tin Woodman is Nick Chopper. So I had the last name right, but his name is Nick Chopper. So we didn't get any text or email, so maybe nobody caught it. Either that or people unsubscribed.
Has anyone ever read these?
Either that or people unsubscribed. Like, what an idiot, you know, or whatever. But his name is Nick Chopper, and the pumpkin is Jack Pumpkinhead. So,
right.
Oh, well. So I'm embarrassed
We just
now.
Want to be above blame here.
We just want to get the capital of Kentucky right at some point. Since my parents live in that state, that would probably be a good thing for us too.
It's Franklin.
Yeah. Sure. Or Louisville, yeah, or something.
Or Louisville.
Yeah. So we mentioned on the last podcast that we were not going to, you know, just pump our own stuff on the podcast. But I wanted to go to an article just for a moment here that our brother-in-law Jeremiah wrote for the blog a couple of weeks ago that I thought was really, really good. It has been viewed since the last podcast. It is the most viewed article by far. You know, sorry, Dad, Mom, Amber, me. But it is by far the most viewed. And the basis behind the article was how we can lose our children. What he meant by that was spiritually speaking, why our children leave the church. And he got some blowback. I got a couple emails he had to respond to and things. But the basic premise behind his article is what I wanted to spend. I'm not going to spend a long time on this because it's an article on our own site. You can go read it if you'd like. But the basic premise is one reason some families, and you have to be general with it, their children leave the faith is because we were not faithful. They don't see the Bible, the church, our relationship with God really deeply in our lives. And I wanted to bring this up on the podcast, Leah, for this simple reason. That's why we do this. It's not so we can be famous. If that was the case, we'd probably have more listeners. or would have stopped a long time ago. Okay? But, you know, we're recording this on Thursday night. Here in a few minutes, we're going to do a short Bible time with our kids. We don't do that so we can say on a podcast, we did Bible time. We do those kind of things. We take our kids to church instead of to ball games. You took Mary Carol to a ladies' day a couple weeks ago that my mom was speaking at, but you could have gone by yourself, but you took Mary Carol. You know, the other night, I took Mary Carol on a daddy-daughter date, but on the date, we stopped by the hospital and visited somebody. I'm not saying any of this to brag, I promise. What I'm trying to say is we want our kids to see that our faith is not just let's crawl out of bed on Sunday morning, make ourselves go to church because everybody in this small southern town goes to church. Our faith is everything to us. That's why we do this whole program. That's why we have the whole website. It's for that reason. And I love Jeremiah's article, not because he was saying, hey, every parent's a sinner, but he was saying your kids likely will not be faithful unless they see your faith infiltrate everything you do.
It goes back to an old, I remember Cindy Cawley doing this illustration years ago about your faith or, you know, spiritual life does not need to be a piece of a pie.
Yeah.
And it's not even if it's the biggest piece of the pie, you're missing the mark.
I don't know if Gwen and Cindy listen to the podcast. I doubt they do. But just in case, I have, let's just say, quote unquote, borrowed that illustration before.
But, you know, she, in a lesson that I listened to, had it, she described your faith needs to be like the hub of a wheel. Like an old-timey wagon wheel, if you can imagine that. In the middle part of that is your faith, and it influences all the other parts of your life. So she said most people, even good people who think they're getting it right, put faith as in a huge part of their life. If the pie, it's a huge part of the pie, but what about those pieces where their faith is not influencing any part of that? And she said that, and I thought, that's a great illustration. Mm-hmm. Really, it's true. You know, and so that's what you're saying, that our faith applies to everything we do.
Right. And that whole picture of the wagon wheel is, if faith is that center part, the wheel doesn't turn without faith.
Right.
You know, everything you do connects to that axis.
Everything that touches that faith somehow.
Right.
Or your faith is touching everything else, rather.
That's right.
That it would be affecting everything in your life.
So if you only listen to the podcast, you don't read the blog or things, please go to the show notes and read Jeremiah's article. If nothing else, it'll make you think. And that's I just want, like I said, we don't usually take our podcast to pump our own stuff, but that has been very widely read. Just, you know, for our website, we don't have, you know, thousands and thousands of readers or anything, but it's been widely read for us. We want to make sure people know about it. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left here. Let's talk about hospitality. All right. I came across this article. I've actually used this website before on the podcast for some things, Of the Hearth. I don't read everything she writes, but every once in a while she puts something on there. She did a little couple, I think it was 2 posts, maybe 3, about hospitality. But I loved this one in the little series. It was not how to have your house ready for hospitality. It was how to have your heart ready for hospitality. And that's where it starts. I don't want to go through everything she lists. But there are a couple of things, because this is close to your heart. And we talk all the time about having people over, but hospitality is more than that. You know, it's making them feel welcome and so on and so forth. But she talks about having, you know, the heart behind it. And one of the points she makes, the very first one, in fact, under the section, what isn't and is hospitality, which always seemed backward to me, is and isn't. But anyway, she said, hospitality isn't just about hosting people in the physical structures of our home. And what she's trying to point out is, yes, it involves bringing people into our home, but it's more than just them walking in the front door. It's about serving and about making sure that they see this as real, you know, biblical fellowship. And I love that concept, because, you know, usually, and that feeds into a lot of other things, because when we bring people into our home, that means not everything has to be perfect. It's about the heart being right first.
I think that's really, really important, because I think that's what really, that idea is what keeps people from actually practicing it.
What do you mean that this idea is what keeps, I think most people don't do it because we're just too busy.
That's one reason, but I think a very big reason people don't want to practice hospitality is they feel like that it is just about having someone over and their house has to be cleaned up and they
perfectly
and they, you know, have to have a really nice planned out meal, and they have to have a little, you know, gift to maybe send back with the people when they leave, or they have to, you know, have the perfect dessert or whatever, you know, the list goes on and on. And so, you know, if their house is kind of dirty, or they're in the middle of this kind of project that makes everything kind of a mess, then they would be very not as likely to have anyone in their home, because we think it's like that. We think it's just about the house or just about the exterior of hospitality, I guess.
Right. And I know we've talked about this in the podcast before, but it's been a long time ago, that there have been times we've been in people's homes for a meal or whatever, and maybe it wasn't the neatest house in the world, or maybe they were in the middle of a project, you know, some kind of project or whatever, but you don't even notice that, because they're serving you and they're wanting to know you, and the conversation is good, and or the activities are interesting or whatever. And you don't say, well, that chair doesn't match that chair. I can't believe they didn't go buy another chair before they had it. Who do I think I am? Who cares? They've had me over to their house. That's fantastic.
And I think, you know, this is really hard for me, though, because I really do want it to look like what, you know, I do want it to be. When someone comes over to my house, I want it cleaned up. And it is hard for me to say, well, okay, things are kind of dirty. I haven't swept the kitchen floor all week long. But, hey, whatever, let them come by. Especially out to eat. And, you know, you think, well, just sweep the floor really quick. But sometimes life gets that busy that you feel like, I'll get to that later, and then you're not building up enough time. You know, there are maybe certain things that everyone would want to do before someone comes over to their house, but the thing is, when there are so many things like that, and all the time you're using those as a reason not to go ahead and show hospitality in your home, then, I mean, that can be bad, because we really go back to that first thing we talked about. We really need people to be encouraged. We need the church to really be encouraging people. And it really does, so many ways, begin with hospitality.
It does. And the last thing, she lists four or five things. We want you to read the article. But the last one she lists on there is, if we really think about it, hospitality, the way that, you know, where you think about it as serving people and so on and so forth, is really displaying the gospel. Because you are putting other people before yourself. You're showing love to them. You're serving other people. But we think of hospitality often as this big show, instead of, it's just serving other people is all it really boils down to. But it's serving them in a specific way.
And I love Laurel Sewell's book, The Six Gifts of Hospitality. And that the whole point of that book is there are all six different ways, at least, that you can show hospitality. And it's not only with food, you know. And so she, read that book. It's really good.
We'll link to
that. I want to do a ladies class on that book.
All right. Because you need something else to do.
Well, I know.
So we always talk about it. We have more to do. And we think, hey, I need to do this. All right. Is that enough for this week?
Sure.
You want to do a Sweet 16 preview? Even though it's like already going on while we're recording this?
Sure.
Can you believe this? I'm recording during the Sweet 16. That's dedication, folks. People have no earthly idea how dedicated. And I haven't even checked my phone to see the scores while we've been doing this. So that's utterly impressive. How about that? 2 weeks from today, when we record, Leah, let's say this as we close, we will be 1 week away from that time, leaving for Nashville, Tennessee. For
Lads 2 Leaders.
Yes, and so a couple of weeks from now on the next podcast, which will be episode 78, I think we're going to be joined by a couple of guests to talk about Lads 2 Leaders a little bit, namely our children, because we can afford them.
and they have to do what we say.
That's right. And so we hope to pull that together, let them talk about why they like Lads 2 Leaders so much, and maybe talk about what they're going to be doing, and then you and I will talk about a couple other things as well. But that's kind of what we're thinking about for a couple of weeks from today. We've listed a lot of resources. You can find all the links at the, what do they call the show notes? Been working with that dog all afternoon. the show notes for this episode, and those can be found at fawnfamily.com/POD77. And again, the number 77. fawnfamily.com/POD77. We will link there to the article about the church not eating coffee bars. We will link to the article from the Federalist about stay-at-home moms don't waste their education. We will link to how to have a hospitality-ready heart. We'll link to Jeremiah's article about raising children. And then we'll link to Laurel Sewell's book, The Six Gifts of Hospitality. So all those can be found there, fawnfamily.com/POD77. Leah, anything else you'd like to say before we get out of here on this week's program?
No, just have a great week.
Or 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
So we'll be back with you again in a couple of weeks. And thank you for listening. Until next time, remember your family can go to heaven. Just make sure you go there together.